No Way Out, Chapter 1. Welcome to the 7th Street. This is an ordinary street with ordinary people in it. And it is beautiful and peaceful street. There are several houses. The houses are big and comfortable. And of course, there are several people living in these houses. These people are of different ages, old, young, middle-aged and newborn. They are doing different jobs. There are architects, teachers, engineers, real estate agents, bankers, journalists, etc. They have different hobbies, interests, habits, opinions, and beliefs. They usually make barbecue parties at the weekends and have great fun. They have one thing in common, one very important thing. They all love and respect each other. They are good friends and good neighbors. They have known each other for years. But every friendship faces difficult times, and no street is forever peaceful and safe. Chapter 2. Let's take a closer look at the neighborhood. There are 6 houses on the street. Meet the Barrett family. They are a family of 7. They are really a big family. Chloe and Lee Barrett have 3 children, Dora, Vera, and Kyle. Lee's parents, Granny Grace and Grandpa Paul, live with them. A single mother is living next door. Her name is Eliza. She has a 15-year-old daughter, Myra. It is hard to be a single mother, and it is hard to be a teenager. They love each other very much, but they fight a lot. Myra is a beautiful girl with brown hair and green eyes. She is a sociable girl. She has got several friends. Myra and Eliza's next-door neighbor is a young couple, Greg and Joy. They both work and travel a lot. They spend a few days at home. Most of the week, they are out of the town. No one knows them well, but they seem to be calm and respectful. A young couple is living across the Barrett family's house. Rodney is a 27-year-old man. His dear wife, Amber, is 25 years old. They have a newborn baby girl. Her name is Hope, and she is only 2 weeks old. She is a cute little baby. Their next-door neighbor is an old lady. Her name is Megan. She is living alone. Everyone helps her because she has no family. She is a nice person. Finally, our last family. It is a small one, a middle-aged couple with a teenager boy. Iris Anderson is a 42-year-old. Her husband, Jasper Anderson, is 44. Their son, Wilson, is their only child. Wilson is 16 years old. He is not a very sociable boy. It is hard for him to express himself and make friends. He doesn't like going out and he doesn't attend the parties. No one knows it, but he is a talented musician. He plays the guitar perfectly and writes beautiful songs. Most of his songs are written for Myra. He can never talk to Myra about his feelings. Maybe she will listen to one of those songs someday. Who knows? It is an ordinary day on the 7th Street. The day started with the warm greetings of the neighbors. Good morning. What a great day. I feel wonderful this morning. People are having breakfast, reading newspapers, drinking coffee. Parents are preparing for work, putting on their suits, polishing their shoes, and getting ready for a busy day at work. Children are preparing for school, checking their school bags, putting on their uniforms, and walking to the bus stop for their school bus. Some people are in a hurry. I'm late for work. See you in the evening. Some people are enjoying a second cup of coffee, but each one of them is very happy this morning. The good thing is, It started as a great day. The bad thing is, it won't last long. Chloe and Lee get in their car. They are ready to go to their work. Chloe has the usual smile on her face. She looks at her husband and says, "Isn't it a wonderful day, honey?" "Yes, it is. The weather is perfect. Maybe we should go on a picnic this weekend." "I think that's a great idea. Maybe we should call your family and go with them. They will be happy to join us." "I know," says Lee and smiles. "You are a great husband, honey. I think I am the luckiest woman on this planet." "Well, thank you, honey. I feel the same about you. This afternoon, I am buying the desserts." "Wow, that's great. I will eat as much as I can." "I think you can eat a lot." "Maybe I should buy only one," says Chloe. Their lovely conversation ends when they see Rodney in front of his door. He is kissing his wife goodbye. Lee opens his window and says, "You never want to leave your cozy home, do you, Rodney?" Rodney sees Lee and smiles. "You are lucky because you go to work with your wife. I am always alone in the office." "Poor chap," says Lee and laughs. Then they see Iris and Jasper walking down the street. "Morning, Iris." "Morning, Jasper," says Lee. "Morning, everybody," says Jasper. Everything seems all right so far. Suddenly, they see helicopters flying above their heads. Far from the end of the street, there are a few broadcast trucks and ambulances and fire trucks and police cars. Everyone is wearing a mask. But behind the masks, people are watching the 7th Street with terrified eyes. "What's going on?" says Rodney. He takes a few more steps and sees the safety tape. The whole street is surrounded with safety tape. "Keep out. Quarantine area. Keep out. Quarantine area." Then everyone hears the police announcement. "Dear residents on the 7th Street, you are under quarantine. Please be calm and wait for the further instructions." Now everyone is in the street. The Barrett family, Eliza, Myra, Greg, Joy, and all the others. They are all shocked. "Is this a joke? You can't be serious. Why are they doing this? Are we going to die?" Then the second announcement comes. "Attention, please. We are receiving extraordinary signals from this area. We are trying to find the source. If you see anything unusual, please don't touch it. Now go back to your homes and wait for further instructions." Chapter 3. Now, the 18 residents of the street are trying to understand what is going on. They don't know what to do. Should they stay, or should they try to leave the street? Greg breaks the silence with an angry voice. Rodney looks at the barricade and says, "They are serious. This is not a joke." "But why are they doing this?" asks Greg. "I don't know. Maybe it is something about the national security." "What do you mean by national security?" "I mean, there may be a terrorist threat or something." "But this is an ordinary street. Who could organize such a thing here?" "Maybe somebody chose this place as a target and left something dangerous here, like a bomb or a chemical weapon." "A chemical weapon would kill everybody in the neighborhood." "Maybe it is just part of a stupid procedure," says Lee. "I mean, maybe it is not that serious." "This doesn't look like a procedure. This is a real quarantine," says Rodney. "This is ridiculous. I have a plane to catch. I am going." His wife Joy follows him. "I'm coming with you," she says. "Who else is coming?" asks Joy to her neighbors. Eliza and Jasper join them. They start walking towards the police barricade. One step, two steps, three steps. They cannot take the fourth step. The police announcement stops them. "I'm warning you. Please stop. Don't come any closer." "Why?" asks Eliza. She is very angry. "You cannot keep us here," shouts Greg. He is furious. "You should make an explanation." "How long will it take?" says Joy. They hear the police announcement again. "We are waiting for the authorities. Please be patient." They are hopeless and they go back. They all go to the park and sit there for a while. They are waiting for an explanation. "Maybe it is a virus," says Chloe. "Maybe we are infected." "Are we going to die?" says Myra. She is about to cry. "Viruses don't send signals, dear." "Calm down," says Eliza. Amber holds her baby. She holds her tight. She wants to protect her. "But who is the enemy?" She doesn't know. "It's going to be fine," says Rodney. He wants to encourage his wife. But actually, he is really scared. Eliza hugs her daughter, Myra. "We are not going to die, I promise," she says. But she isn't sure about anything. Everyone is trying to be optimistic. They are trying to encourage each other. But actually, everyone is tense and worried. A few hours pass, but there's no explanation. This time, Megan breaks the silence. "Let's prepare something to eat and meet here. Let's have lunch together," she says. They all agree. Everybody goes home. A few minutes later, they hear a scream. It is Megan. "Oh my God, what is..." She cannot finish her sentence. Jasper, Greg, and Lee run into Megan's house. "Did you hear that? I guess she needs help." Just at that moment, they hear another scream. This time it is Lee. "No, don't touch it." Then they hear Joy scream. "Help!" Now Myra is screaming too. "Mom, there's something in here." The police hear the screams too. The fire trucks and the ambulances start their engines. All the TV reporters take their microphones. The photographers start taking photos of the street. "This is just in," says the reporter. "We hear screams. Everyone wonders what is going on there." The authorities are still silent. "What are those signals? Why doesn't anyone help them? Is the whole country in danger?" We still don't know. Chapter 4. Megan runs out with a pale face. She is trembling. She is holding something in her hand. Then Chloe and Joy run out. They are both pale and out of breath. They are holding something in their hands. Three women are in the middle of the street now. "I found this in the kitchen," says Megan. "I found this in the bathroom," says Chloe. "This was on the carpet in the living room," says Joy. Then Myra comes out. She is holding the same thing in her hands. "I found this on my bed." "What is this?" she asks with a frightened voice. They decide to check the other two houses. Rodney comes first. "In the cupboard," he says. "You shouldn't touch it." "Don't you remember the announcement?" says Amber. "I know, but I couldn't help it," says Rodney. Then Wilson comes. "We couldn't find it," he says. He looks confused. "Is it bad or is it good?" he asks. No one has the answer. "What is that thing in their hands?" "It is a shiny black stone. It is round and smooth. It is as big as a soccer ball. It seems harmless." "Is this the reason we are under quarantine?" asks Lee. "It doesn't make sense. This is just an ordinary stone," says Amber. "What do you think, Rodney?" she asks her husband. Rodney doesn't say anything. "Rodney! Rodney! Rodney, talk to me," says Amber again. But Rodney is silent. He doesn't seem to hear anything. Megan, Chloe, Joy, and Myra are silent too. Their eyes are open, but they cannot see. They are standing like stone statues. There's no sign of life, but there's no sign of death either. Chapter 5. Now the chaos rises. Everyone is panicked. They run to the police, they beg for help. But no one can help them because no one knows what to do. They shout, they cry, they run. They feel desperate and helpless. Then they hear the police announcement again. Don't touch the infected ones. Don't stay too close to them. It may be dangerous. Shall we leave them alone? Shouts Lee. Like you left us alone here, he adds. He is really upset. He is crying now. He hugs his wife Chloe. I will never leave you alone, dear. I am with you until. He cannot finish his sentence. He is frozen too. The policeman talks again. This time you can sense the fright in his voice. This is serious. Don't touch them. Don't get close to them. And don't try to pass the security tape. Now, 6 people are frozen and the other 12 are waiting. Waiting for an explanation. Waiting for a cure. Waiting for a miracle. Do you believe in miracles? Do they believe in miracles? I guess they have no other choice. Chapter 6. A few hours later, the TV reporters are getting ready for the evening news. The cameras are shooting, the reporters are speaking. One of the reporters is making an interview with the chief police officer. They are surrounded by a curious crowd and try to understand what is really going on 7th Street. The chief officer looks very nervous and does not really want to do the interview, but he has to say something to chill the people out. Their anger is growing every second. The reporter checks the camera and begins to present the breaking news. Good afternoon. Today we are witnessing a very strange phenomenon. In this silent and peaceful street, people are under quarantine. Nobody knows the exact reason of the quarantine, but there are 6 frozen people, which indicates that there is a rational reason for this precaution. Now, I would like to ask some questions to the police chief of the quarantine. Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon. Can you explain to us the exact reason of the quarantine? Well, all I can say is that we get unusual radio signals around 7th Street. We don't exactly know the source of the signals, but we are almost sure that these signals do not belong to our planet. They are very unusual and unique. Do you mean that creatures from a different planet are trying to contact us? We don't really know if these signals are sent to contact us or not, so we are trying our best to protect our nation. There may be unpredictable outcomes of these signals. I see. What about the frozen people? I mean, some people are already experiencing horrible results of these signals. What happened to them? Doctors and scientists are going to examine the victims, but all we know is the frozen people found some strange stones in their houses and touched them. Can you show us the stones? No, unfortunately I can't because they seem to be extremely dangerous. So what do you suggest for these people in 7th Street? I suggest that they should all stay at home and wait for further instructions. If they see something unusual, they should directly report it to the officers. Lastly, they should never touch those strange stones. Thank you very much, officer. You are welcome. The interview has ended and no one got any satisfactory answer. They are still nervous and angry. 6 people are frozen and they cannot leave this horrible place. 6 people are frozen. We don't know if they are dead or alive. The other residents are trying to be calm. They are very supportive of each other. The scientists and the doctors are doing their best to bring victims back to life. Are those stones from outer space? Is this an alien attack? Is this a terrorist attack? Who is responsible for this? Perhaps these stones are nuclear wastes and extremely radioactive. It is depressing to hear all these. It is depressing to hear Chloe and Lee's children crying. It is really hard to calm Eliza and Amber down. But they are doing their best. They are exhausted with hunger, sorrow, and fear. It is useless to ask for an explanation. It is obvious that no one can explain anything, so they don't even try to ask. It is useless to try to leave the street, not because of the police barricade, but they cannot leave their loved ones behind, so they don't even think about leaving the street. They accept the things as they are. They are stuck. No one can help them. They are on their own. "What will we do now?" asks Granny Grace. She looks at the children, Dora, Verna, and Kyle. "They are hungry," she says. They decide to eat together at the park. Everyone prepares something, and they can eat silently. Greg looks into his wife's eyes. They are cold and lifeless. She stands there like a statue. He cries. Then the sun goes down, and the night unfortunately arrives. No one wants to go home. They bring blankets and try to sleep in the park. Eliza cries for her daughter Myra until the morning. Greg checks and rechecks his wife again and again. But it is always the same cold eyes. Amber tries to sing lullabies to Hope. She repeats saying, "Daddy is going to be all right, baby." The morning comes with a terrible shock. Granny Grace and Grandpa Paul are frozen too. They are holding blankets in their hands. It is obvious that they tried to cover Lee and Chloe with blankets. They wanted to keep them warm. Now they are looking with cold and empty eyes. How sad. Cameras start shooting for the morning news. The media names the victims as the Frozen Eight. Chapter 7. When Eliza hears the Frozen Eight, she starts crying and shouting. "They have names. They are our families, our friends, our neighbors. They are not just numbers." Iris and Jasper try to calm her down. Iris hugs Eliza and tries to talk to her. Eliza shouts even more loudly. "Don't touch me," she says. There is a hostile look in her eyes. "You are responsible for all of these." "Us?" asks Iris. She is shocked. "Yes, you. We couldn't find any stones in your house, right? All your family is safe and alive, right? How do you explain this?"
"I can't," says Iris. She doesn't know what to say.
"Well, let me explain it for you," says Greg. "Eliza is right. You are responsible for all of these things. Well, every friendship faces difficult times. The important thing is that it is the friendship strong enough to continue." "We don't want you here anymore," says Amber. Iris and Jasper try to defend themselves, but it is impossible. "Come on, dear. We are all very upset. Let's wait for a while and talk to them later," says Jasper. They take Wilson with them and walk home. Wilson looks at Myra's eyes. "We are innocent, Myra," he says. "I would never hurt you." Myra and the others are getting pale. They are paler than the previous night. They are paler than a few minutes ago. Iris, Jasper, and Wilson are sitting in their living room. Eliza, Greg, and the others are sitting at the park. No one is speaking. They are as frozen as the Frozen Eight. Chapter 8. Wilson starts searching the house. He wants to find that black stone. He searches every inch of the house. "Are you out of your mind?" asks his mother. "What will you do if you find it?" "I don't know," says Wilson, and he starts crying. "I just want them to know that we are innocent." Iris hugs her son and soothes him. "We are innocent, and they know that. They are extremely upset, and they have lost their control." "We all are.
Things will get better, don't worry, she says. Just at that moment, the people at the park see some new cars behind the security line. A new team arrives. They are in white. They look like astronauts. And once again, they hear the police announcement. Dear residents, the scientists arrived and they want to talk to you. Now everyone runs to the barricade. They are all listening. A man speaks with a confident voice. A really strange thing has happened here. To be honest, we are still not sure about the causes. We are not allowed to explain those stones, but... Well, let me give the good news at first. I think we found the cure. It is impossible to describe their feelings. They are crying, laughing, hugging each other. Greg is the first one to speak. How can we trust you? You are not sure, you cannot explain, you just think you found the cure? You may be right. This is a very weird situation. And we don't have much time. They are getting paler every minute. We don't know what is going on inside them. We should try this cure before it is too late. Greg knows that he has no other choice. What is the cure? He asks. A risky one, answers the scientist. We do not know the side effects of this cure, but we seem to have no other choice. We are not laboratory mice. You can't treat us like that, says Greg. I know you are not, but, as I said, this situation is totally strange and we are all helpless. We don't really know if the victims are dead or alive. We couldn't do detailed examination, but because of the quarantine, that's all we can do. What will we do? How are we going to help them? Asks Greg. The scientist continues. As I said, it is a little risky. Risky for who? Is it risky for you, not for them? So, what are we going to do? Tell us already. We have prepared a liquid medication. You will inject the medicine into their veins. Is this medication dangerous? I mean, is it radioactive or something? No, it is not radioactive. The medicine is completely harmless. The dangerous part is getting close to the victims. We still do not know if this illness is contagious or not. So the only problem is getting close to them, am I right? Yes, exactly. I repeat, we will inject something completely harmless. Actually, you will inject it. You will wear one of these special clothes. We hope that it will protect you from the effect of the stones. We cannot guarantee it. I need a volunteer. I will do it, says Greg. No, I will, says Eliza. Amber, Iris, and Jasper want to help too. Wilson wants to say something, but he knows that his parents would never let him. You have a little baby, Amber, and you, Eliza, have a teenage daughter. So I will do it, says Greg. He doesn't even talk to Iris and Jasper. I know you are angry, but please listen to me, says Jasper. You barely slept last night and you are very tired. Please let me do it. Iris agrees with her husband and they persuade Greg. Jasper puts on the special suit, takes the syringe, and begins to walk to the park. He looks into Myra's cold eyes. I have to tell you something when you wake up, he says. He begins to inject the medicine into her vein. But nothing happens. Myra is still like a statue. Jasper is trembling. Iris is shouting. Are you okay? Chapter 9. They are really upset and desperate. On the bright side, Greg and the others understood that Wilson and his family are innocent. They decide to sit at the park together. Let's have breakfast. It is almost 11 and we are starving, says Amber. Everyone goes home to bring some food. They will meet at the park and have breakfast together. Wilson is sitting at the park. He is right in front of Myra. I'm sorry, Myra, he says. I can't believe I couldn't see all the beauty of our neighborhood. I mean, I always loved her, but I didn't know that it was the source of my happiness. Then Wilson starts singing. He sings one of his own songs. the song he wrote for Myra. He finishes his song with tears in his eyes. "What a beautiful song," a voice says. Wilson raises his head. "It's a miracle. It's Myra." The black stone drops. It breaks. Now there are several little black stones on the ground. They are rolling toward Wilson. "Be careful," shouts Myra. They start shrinking as they roll. They get smaller and smaller. Finally, they disappear. Myra hugs Wilson. "Are you okay?" asks Wilson. He is very happy. Actually, it is the happiest moment in his life. Myra is okay and she is hugging him. "Yes," says Myra. "Do you remember anything?" "How did you feel?" asks Wilson. "All I remember is darkness. I was in the dark at the whole time," she answers. After the first stone disappears, the other seven stones collapsed and disappeared by themselves. Without any syringe or injection, the other seven people wake up from their dark sleep. The street is safe now. The residents are saved. The police remove the safety tape and the barricade. The doctors examine the victims. The reporters talk to the residents. The detectives and the scientists search the houses. There are hundreds of people on 7th Street now. It is very crowded. Greg, Eliza, and Amber find Iris and her husband. They owe them an apology. Jasper hugs them gently. "No need to apologize," he says. We were all very upset and tense. Chapter 10. Myra finds Wilson in the crowd. "You were singing a beautiful song," she says. "I wrote it," says Wilson. "Oh, really?" Myra looks a bit upset. "I hope she knows how lucky she is," she says. "Who?" asks Wilson. His heart is about to explode. "The girl in the song," says Myra. She turns her eyes away. "This is my only chance, now or never," Wilson thinks. "What if I say..." Wilson starts, but he cannot go on. "What?" asks Myra. "Say it," she insists. "The girl in the song. It is you, Myra." Myra looks into his eyes. After a long silence, she speaks. "I wished it was me," she says. They confess their love and hug happily. That night, they watch the news on TV. One reporter is having an interview with the president about this unusual case. They are all ears. "Good evening, Mr. President. Can you explain to us what happened on 7th Street?" "Well, it was a very unusual incident in the beginning, but we soon discovered the source of the problem. One of our security departments made a horrible mistake in one of their experiments. We will find the people who are responsible for the mistake and punish them." "So you mean it wasn't the aliens? Because a lot of people still think that it was caused by aliens." "No, it wasn't. It was just an experiment." They all listened to the president, but no one believed him. They know that it was not an experiment, but they can't prove it, so all of them decided to continue their modest lives. The next morning, everything is back to normal. The day starts with warm greetings of the neighbors. People are having breakfast, reading newspapers, drinking coffee. Parents are preparing for work, and the children are preparing for school. Some people are in a hurry. Some people are enjoying a second cup of coffee. But each one of them is very happy this morning. The good thing is it started as a good day. And no more bad things on this street anymore.